Chapter 15. The Rundown. With Carlos out of the picture, Violet's attention was turned to Sam, who was still laying on the floor. She quickly retrieved a medical kit from the ambulance and returned to his side. As she began to take a closer look and assess the extent of his injuries, Sam's grip tightened on her arm, a kind of one-handed hug, as if to let her know he was proud of her. "Thank you, Violet," he finally managed to say, his voice laced with pain. Their ordeal seemed to be over, and getting Sam to a hospital was now the highest priority. Violet nodded with a reassuring smile, then replied, "You're going to be okay. The bleeding seems to have stopped." Looking around, she noticed her pants on the floor, partially underneath a dead terrorist. Her pants were covered in blood. With a grim look, she said, "Oh man, my pants are ruined. I wonder where my coat is." With all that had just transpired, Sam thinking about Violet fretting over her pants made him laugh. He replied, "I think your coat is on the table next to us." His voice was weak but steady. Violet stood up and found her coat on the table. As she gingerly picked up her blood-spattered coat, using just her fingertips, she said, "Oh no. Yuck. My coat is also ruined." From pockets in her coat, she carefully removed her phone and sunglasses, trying her best to not touch any of the gross stuff. Then she asked her phone, "Hey Siri, what address am I at?" The artificial voice responded promptly, 1023 Prairie Road, Houston, Texas. Now armed with an address, she could call for help. Violet dialed 911, then said to Sam, "I'm calling 911 first so we can get an ambulance on the way. Then I have one more call to make." Sam replied, "Great, get me out of here." With the 911 operator on the phone, Violet explained her situation, saying, "Listen close, because I can't stay on the phone, and I know this call is recorded anyway. My name is Violet Wheeler, and I'm an EMT. I'm located at 1023 Prairie Road in Houston, Texas. This is a terrorist situation. Send all the police you can muster." Violet looked around the room, then said, "I'm in a room surrounded by a whole bunch of dead terrorists." She looked up at Carlos, then added with a chuckle, "And one terrorist hanging from an overhead door." She paused for a moment, looking over at Sam with a mischievous smile. "By the looks of things, I only need one ambulance. My partner has been shot in the leg and he has a perforated wound." Violet was anxiously pacing back and forth as she spoke to the 911 operator. She added, "At the moment, all the terrorists seem to have been terminated. Tell all your responders to get here as fast as they can." Violet looked over at Sam and said, "They're on their way. Once the police get here, we can be sure no other terrorists will show up." Sam gave her a nod. As she continued with her pacing, Violet turned her attention back to her phone. "Hey Siri, call Dwayne Scott." After a few seconds, Dwayne Scott answered, "Hello, Dwayne Scott here, FBI." Violet replied, "Hi Dwayne, my name is Violet Wheeler. You came and interviewed me at my firehouse a couple of days ago. You told me to call you if I had any more information on Carlos Mendoza." Dwayne asked, "Well, what have you got?" Violet said, "How can I put this?" She sighed, then continued, "I'm in a warehouse just outside of Houston. Carlos is here too. Only he's dead now, along with about 10 of his fellow terrorists." Violet looked over at Sam with an unsure facial expression. Shrugging her shoulders, she wondered how Dwayne was going to take what she just told him, because it sounded so extreme. After a pause, Dwayne responded, "What did you say?" Violet replied, "I'll make this as simple as I can. I'm in a building with a whole bunch of dead terrorists. I know, it sounds crazy, but you should get here as fast as you can. All of this just happened." Waving his hand, Dwayne urgently signaled to a group of other agents in the room with him to come close so they could listen in on his conversation. Sounding puzzled, he responded, "I just put you on speakerphone. Where are you?" Violet answered, "The address I'm at is 1023 Prairie Road. I think somewhere on the west side of Houston, Texas, and I'm in a metal warehouse." Dwayne wrote the address down on a piece of paper and said to the agent next to him, "Look it up." Dwayne disclosed to Violet, "I'm at the Houston Executive Airport with my team. We've been in the Houston area since yesterday chasing down terrorist chatter." Violet replied, "Well, I think I found your chatter, only they won't be chattering anymore." Dwayne asked, "What would you be doing in a room with a whole bunch of dead terrorists?" Violet answered, "They kidnapped my partner and me, and brought us to this warehouse." After hesitating for a moment, she added, "Well, one thing led to another, so now they're all dead, including Carlos." Violet recognized that her story sounded incredibly far-fetched, and she just hoped that Duane would believe her. Using his phone, an agent showed a map to Duane locating where Violet was, then with a hand signal, Duane signaled his team that they were moving out. Duane asked, "What did you mean by, one thing led to another? What happened?" Violet didn't want to go into detail over the phone, so she simply answered, "Don't worry, they were all very bad people." Then she added, "On the positive side, you won't have to put any of them on trial. Just get here fast, I've already called 911 so the cops should be getting here soon." As he opened a door exiting an airport hangar's office, Duane replied, "We'll be there in about 15 minutes. Then he hung up. Duane and his team ran out of the hangar that they were in, and toward a waiting FBI helicopter that was just spinning up its rotor. He and his team quickly got on board, and Duane said to everyone, "I'll fill you in once we get airborne." Violet turned off her phone and knelt down next to Sam. Still on the floor, Sam was now sitting upright with his back against the wall. Trying to look on the positive side, Violet said, "We're still alive, and we stopped all the bad guys. What more could we ask for?" With a smile and a deep sigh of relief, her tensions ebbed away. All they had to do now was sit calmly and wait for help to arrive. A moment later, Sam and Violet heard the approach of footsteps. Violet smiled at Sam, impressed with how quickly the police had arrived, and just as she stood up, she was just in time to take a flying kick to the chest, sending her airborne against the back door of the ambulance. It was Cheng. Both Sam and Violet had completely forgotten about Cheng, who had disappeared into an office shortly after he arrived. Violet was hurt with the wind knocked out of her, and she was dazed and unable to get up off the floor. Cheng saw Violet's condition, and hurriedly picked up a knife from the floor to finish her off. With one knee on her back, Cheng raised the knife, set to plunge it into her. It was at that moment when someone grabbed Cheng's wrist. It was Sam. Somehow, Sam had fought through the pain of his bullet wound to rescue Violet. Sam gripped Cheng's wrist with one hand and wrapped his other arm around Cheng's neck, lifting him off of Violet. Sam said to Cheng, "Not going to happen. You're in trouble now, Cheng." As Sam began to tighten his chokehold around Cheng's neck, Cheng dropped the knife so he could use both hands to try to break free. Kicking several times at Sam's wounded leg, Cheng began to wiggle loose. Though in a lot of pain, Sam was still much stronger than Cheng. Sam lifted Cheng over his head, then threw him across the room against the edge of a work table. Sam stood there, standing guard between Violet and Cheng. Shaking his head and finger, Sam defiantly said, "I'm not going to let you hurt my partner." Trying to discourage Cheng and protect Violet, Sam added, "The cops are on their way, and will be here any minute. You should run away while you can." Visibly shaken, Cheng was slow to get up. Just then, the sound of approaching sirens could be heard in the distance, and Cheng went from attack mode to escape mode. The table next to Cheng still had a suicide vest on top of it. He snatched the vest off the table and moved toward Sam. Holding the detonator and vest in front of him like a shield, Cheng yelled, "Back away or I'll detonate it." Sam began backing off, eventually giving Cheng clear access to the back of the ambulance. With the back doors already open, he tossed the vest into the ambulance, and then quickly closed the doors. Cheng ran and jumped into the cab of the ambulance. Sam tried to give chase, but his leg was in too much pain to move fast. The ambulance started, and with Cheng at the wheel, he sped out of the warehouse with Sam limping behind. The gate had never been closed after Cheng had arrived earlier, so Cheng was able to make a speedy and clean getaway. After Cheng had driven through the gate, he found the button for the ambulance's emergency lights. With the flashing lights of the ambulance turned on, he sped back towards the interstate highway. The ambulance and its flashing lights would be Cheng's ticket to run the police gauntlet. Sam watched Cheng drive away, then limped back inside the warehouse just as Violet was getting to her feet. "Violet, are you all right?" Sam asked. Still a bit sluggish, and feeling the backside of her head with her hand, Violet replied, "Yeah. Yeah, I'm okay, just a headache." Then she asked, "Where is Cheng? Where is the ambulance?" Sam answered, "He heard the sirens from the police cars coming, so he got out of here as fast as he could." But he grabbed the suicide vest from the table and threw it into the back of the ambulance onto the floor. Then he took the ambulance, he's gone. With a terrified expression on Violet's face, she said, oh no, he's going to use that suicide vest to kill people. Violet was frantic to do something to stop Cheng, as the sirens were getting closer. That's when she spotted Cheng's motorcycle with the keys still in it, which gave her an idea. Sam, I've got to stop him. I can't let that vest get away. People will die. Without a helmet, she quickly put on Cheng's motorcycle jacket and gloves that he left behind on his motorcycle. All of the dead terrorists had long rifles, and some of them had scopes. Violet swiftly picked up a gun with a scope and an extra magazine, then she put her head through the gun's shoulder strap, so that the gun was positioned on her back. As Violet climbed onto the motorcycle and fired it up, Sam limped over to her and pleaded, Violet, let this one go, let the police get him, you've done so much already. Putting on her sunglasses, she replied, I can't take that chance, there's way too much at stake, I've got to try to stop him myself, when the cops get here, tell them about Cheng and that I'm after him. Thank you, for saving me again Sam, I got this. With a twist of the throttle, she smoked her rear tire and peeled out of the building. Then she passed through the open gate, just as the first police car arrived. Cheng's motorcycle was exceptionally fast, and as she got onto the open road, she accelerated to a very high speed, heading toward the interstate. Violet could see a whole line of flashing police cars coming toward her in the distance. She knew that she would not be able to outrun their radios, and it was going to be tough to get past them all, so she began looking for an escape route. As far as the police knew, she was a suspect trying to escape. Unfortunately, Cheng had a big head start on her. To catch up to Cheng, she was going to have to push the speed of the motorcycle to its limits. At the same time, Violet was in no way dressed for a motorcycle ride. She was without a helmet, and still with no pants. The chill of the morning air was sharp and intense, and the stinging cold of her pursuit would be numbing. Traveling at dangerous speeds, she also realized it was possible that the police might even use deadly force to stop her. Violet had easily sped past the first few police cars. But then she spotted two police cars ahead of her, positioning their cars to block the road. She also noticed a dirt road just beyond the roadblock that was heading east and parallel to the interstate. On each side of the road was a sizable dry and deep drainage swale, and the only way past the roadblock was to run off the road through the swale. Violet was traveling at high speed, and closing on the roadblock fast. The police officers had just positioned themselves, but did not have time to get out of their cars, so they braced for impact. At the last second, Violet drove off the road to the right, and down through the swale. As she passed by the roadblock, she saw yet another police cruiser approaching. Turning the motorcycle sharp to the left, she was able to use the slope of the swale like a ramp, launching herself high into the air and overtopped the approaching police cruiser. She skipped her tires on the roof of the cruiser, and when she came back down to the ground, she slammed on her brakes and slid sideways, lining the motorcycle up with the dirt road. Then, with another burst of speed and a rooster tail of dirt behind her, she launched herself again, rocketing down the dirt road that cut through the farmland in parallel with the interstate. About a half mile off to the right and far ahead of her, she could see the flashing lights of the ambulance heading east on the interstate. Cheng seemed to be heading back towards Houston, which was also in the same direction of the Calvary Christian Center. It dawned on Violet that if he wanted to escape, he would have probably turned west on the interstate, traveling away from Houston. She remembered what Cheng said, all I care about is my mission. His mission, at that time, was to facilitate an attack on the Calvary Christian Center, and with Carlos out of the picture, it seemed probable that he was going to personally carry out the mission. In Violet's mirror, she spotted a police car giving chase. The rough terrain of the dirt road limited her speed, while the police car was pressuring her from behind, but she stayed focused on finding an on-ramp to the interstate. As she approached Houston's urban sprawl, she could see that the dirt road she was on was ending, but it intersected with another paved crossroad. She thought that there was a good chance that this crossroad also intersected with the interstate. She decided to turn onto the crossroad and speed south toward the interstate. As she approached the crossroad, she braked hard, power sliding so that her motorcycle rotated, lining up the motorcycle so that she was aimed toward the interstate. As she slid onto the paved street, She accelerated so rapidly that the front tire of the motorcycle lifted off the ground each time she shifted gears. Violet was putting substantial distance between her and the police car in pursuit, focusing only on what was ahead of her. She had to weave around several cars at dangerously high speed, and as she approached the interstate, she could see that the interstate crossed above the road she was on. Luckily, there was also an on-ramp that she could take toward Houston. Turning sharp toward the on-ramp, she leaned the motorcycle heavy into the turn, cutting off an oncoming car that narrowly missed her. Now on I-10, Violet accelerated to over 140 miles per hour. Fortunately, it was early on Sunday, the day after the city's late-night celebration of the New Year, and there was not much traffic out yet. The sound of the motorcycle's engine was singing, as she stayed low on the bike, surgically weaving through the traffic heading into the city, passing vehicles like they were standing still. Ahead of her, in the distance, she was catching glimpses of the flashing lights from the ambulance she was pursuing, but she still had a lot of distance to close in order to catch up. Finally, the Calvary Christian Center came into Violet's view on the north side of the interstate. At the same time, she could see the off-ramp to the road that would lead to the church, and the ambulance was nowhere in view. Violet assumed that the ambulance had by now left the interstate and was probably already approaching the church. In the downtown area of the city, the interstate is elevated with off-ramps dropping down to street level. Violet decided that if she continued to follow the ambulance to the church, she would not get there in time to intercept. She had to do something drastic. Pulling onto the left shoulder of the eastbound lanes, Violet slammed on her brakes and came to a smoking stop. Jumping off the motorcycle, she dropped it to the ground, then scrambled over the concrete divider between traffic lanes. Now facing westbound traffic, Violet ran out into oncoming traffic, crossing through six lanes to get to the north side of the interstate. Cars were slamming on their brakes, with several just barely missing her. Violet had made her way to the north side of the interstate, next to a concrete wall, where she had a good view looking down on the church's parking lots, including the gated entrance, where the ambulance was scheduled to report. Luckily, Cheng was just pulling up to the gate with the ambulance, now with the emergency lights off, and she knew by its markings it was definitely her ambulance. She had arrived just in time. But the back of the ambulance was facing Violet, which meant that she did not have a view of Cheng. From here, up high along the interstate, was going to be her last chance to stop Cheng and spare the church. Tossing the glove she was wearing to the ground, Violet took the rifle she had brought and cocked it, chambering around into the firing chamber, then she took aim. Looking through the scope, she said to herself, "I sure hope this scope has been calibrated." She fired a first shot. It hit the back of the ambulance, but just barely. It hit near the top of the ambulance and far to the right of her aim. "Oh no," she cried out. She recognized that the scope was never calibrated to the gun, a standard procedure for setting up any new rifle, resulting with the gun's aim being far off from the crosshairs of the scope. Stopping Cheng with this gun just got a whole lot more difficult. "Aim low and to the left," she said to herself. Drawing on her experience, she was going to have to estimate the aim of the gun. She fired another shot, and then another. Violet continued to fire round after round. She was working a pattern, trying to connect with the suicide vest in the back of the ambulance, shooting through the back doors. Meanwhile, Cheng heard the bullets hitting the ambulance. He couldn't see Violet, but knew something was up, and he began to panic. In an attempt to get the attention of security, he leaned on the horn and blew it several times. Just then the gate began to open, rolling on a rail off to the right. Violet could see the gate opening, just as she emptied the gun's magazine. Time was running out for Violet, and she knew it. She quickly inserted a second and last magazine into the gun, then she resumed firing while the gate continued to slowly open. After many more shots, she estimated she was almost out of ammunition when the ambulance began to proceed through the gate. Violet paused for a moment and thought about what she was doing. She was puzzled, because her shooting pattern wasn't working. She thought about the ride getting here from the warehouse. She remembered that Sam said that Cheng tossed the vest into the back, onto the floor. On the way here, the ambulance likely took several high-speed left-hand turns. Perhaps, she thought, the vest had slid during these turns, and was on the floor along the far right side of the ambulance. With the ambulance pulling forward, and already through the gate, Violet took aim, knowing she was almost out of time and ammo. These last few shots would be it. Targeting a new area, she fired a shot. Nothing. She took a deep breath, then fired another shot. This time, in an instant, there was a huge explosion blowing the ambulance apart. Another massive secondary explosion followed, when the gas tank was ripped open and ignited. A mushroom-shaped fireball over 200 feet high burned into the sky. Finally, a bullet had found its target. The radiant heat from the fireball was so intense, it forced Violet to quickly take cover behind the concrete wall. With a big sigh of relief, Violet sat down and leaned against the wall. It was over. All the threats were terminated. She was certain that the explosion would immediately initiate the church to lock down. All the good people were safe. With a vengeful smile, Violet said aloud, "Cheng, you picked a bad day to be a traitor. You can kiss your mission goodbye." It wasn't long before Violet heard the siren of a police car approaching. She said to herself, "Violet, time to assume the position." She tossed the gun a good distance away from her, then stretched out face down on the road with her legs and arms spread wide. She wanted to make sure that she signaled to the police that she was not a threat, while waiting for the police to arrive and arrest her. Plus, it felt good just laying there. Still just wearing a coat with no pants and her work boots, but she was done. Violet had wiped out an entire terror cell and saved the lives of thousands of innocent people. She was a hero. Something she was going to have to explain to the police somehow. But for now, it felt good just resting, even on a cold road.